Okay.
Let's go ahead and get started. So, first off, it seems some of you have been having problems with the assignment. I didn't anticipate it being so difficult for some of you. So, I just want to get a quick show of hands. How many of you would want, like, an extra day or so? If you've already submitted your assignment, you could also submit, you know, things. Because I'm going to go over some answers today in class, but I'm not going to go over code. And frankly, the code is, you know, the harder part of the assignment. And most of the answers are actually there. So I will put...
But before the midterm, we'd have the solutions to the assignment.
Well, that's what I'm kind of wondering is... I was going to put up the full solutions, if I put them up, say, Thursday night, you know, is that going to be too late for those? And I'm more concerned about those of you who are studying.
We still have the tutorial on Friday.
And Friday in the tutorial will be, basically, Friday tutorial will essentially be extended office hours. The TAs and me will be in the lab. You can be, you know, working on things, and we can, you know, do it. I'll have some more exercises for you to do if you want, but basically that's a... you know, time to ask questions and stuff also. Yes?
Yeah, for the lab on Friday, can they do like a mini quiz type thing?
Ah. But what I was planning on doing was giving you a puzzle like there was in the assignment and have you all try to work it out and try to explain what the different things were, because that seems like some of the trickier parts. Otherwise, code-wise, I gave you the adventure game last week. I figured that's... You know, and I will tell you that I like to reuse code. There's the code from the assignments, but there's also the stuff in the tutorials. So I'm hoping you understand the adventure game. I'll say that. The adventure game and the session stuff are pretty close. The only big difference with the adventure game was that it had a function. It automatically generated the URL handles. It had a function that returned functions, and that was used to set up the routes. And I'm hoping if you understand that, that will really help you understand the puzzle. So I will go through the puzzle in class today, because what was I saying? So part B, I said, what are the values for the following expressions? So I said you can get the answers to these by running these through your interpreter, but I want to go through these today. But let me just talk quickly about the... But before I do this, so I will make the assignment... You can revise your assignment up through tomorrow at, say, you know, what time?
2:30,
even 24
hours.
What? 24 hours? Does that seem good? That way, it gives you if you're planning on studying tomorrow evening, then you have time. You'll have it ready, you know, studying tomorrow evening. Okay, so I'll give it 24 hours. Then the solutions will go up, and then no more assignments, you know, submissions. And if you know, and this goes for everyone. If you feel like you want to go back and fix some of your answers, go ahead. I'm guessing for those of you who have already submitted, you're probably happy to be done with it, because I'm guessing you have a few other things to do. So. That's one of the reasons why I don't like trying to make things slip too much, but I have gotten a lot of questions with the past couple of office hours and sort of things, so. Yep.
So tomorrow we have till 2:30 sharp to hand it in, if you want to revise it?
I'll probably set it to like 4 o'clock.
Yeah.
Say in the lecture, but like basically around then. I'll go in to see you learn and change it. But so let's say 4 o'clock to end of class. So this is assignment 2. What did I want to do here? I want to go here. I want to go here. And I want to go to the lectures. So we are here. So all I put right now for this, I'll put some more stuff after we talk here. But the big thing I want you to know for your review, the best way to review for this, if you have not looked at the books yet, you're missing out. You should sit down and look at the books. In particular, I mean, you should be able to see what it is, but chapters 3, 4, and 6 in the JavaScript, the good parts, you should know pretty solid. The learning notebook covers more material than we're covering in class. It's all useful, but it's not strictly there. So in particular, chapters 6 through 8 have some other material. Like in particular, like chapter 8 talks about this other template language called EJS instead as an alternative to Jade. It might be useful to look through that, but in particular, I'd say if you want to understand what Jade's doing, this is good to look at. Chapter 7 describes Express, but chapter 7 is done in terms of chapter 6, which is routing and connect. It turns out Express is built on top of this other middleware called connect, and a lot of the functions that you see that are just express.something are actually connect methods. They're just directly exported. So for example, all the cookie parsing that you see is actually just exposed from connect. So if you look at chapter 6, part 7 and 8, you'll get a more in-depth discussion of what we're talking about in class. So treat this as something to, if you're feeling confused about something, then look at it. If the code and everything makes perfect sense and you have no problem with the assignments and everything, then okay, you've already learned it. But I assigned this because it's a good reference. It really does talk about a lot of detail. Also, the earlier ones, we got print loop and the module system. That's all discussed there. So use the book. Okay? Now what I'd like to do is go through the assignments. In particular, I want to go through first the puzzle. So, first off, before I talk about this, was this hard?
The puzzle card?
Yeah. It was it? You can predict all the values?
I guess that step that has like three calls at once, where we decide to function using eval. That's kind of confusing, but it's pretty easy to follow.
Okay. So let me see if I can bring up. Do we have? Okay. So, here's puzzle. So if you're looking at this code, what variables are at the prompt that you get puzzle? What symbols are defined that are here in this code? What top level symbols can you access? I want to type, if I type symbols, so let's see what's defined in this file, the top level symbols. Let's just go through what are the things that are defined not as part of another function, but at the top level of this file. What's in the file scope? And what's in the global scope? So first off, what's defined here in the global scope?
Why?
That's the only thing defined in the global scope in this file. What's defined in the file scope in this file? So, three things. REPL, F, and P. That's all that's defined in the file scope here. Is the file scope available from the prompt? Can we access things in the file scope directly? No. We do not have access to the file scope at all. We may have access to objects and other data structures that are referenced here, but that's only because we have another pointer to it. Y is available, but the only reason Y is available is because this is set to true. By default, when you use the readeval print loop routine, when it creates a new readeval print loop, it doesn't export the global state. So this says use the global state.
So without that, what's the?
What would be the difference if I did not include this? If I made this false, use global.
You wouldn't see why.
I wouldn't see why. That's the only difference I see. So what symbol, but now again, what when you're at the prompt, what symbols to find in this file are available? Is F available? No. Is REPL available? No. Y is available because it's in the global scope. Is P available? No. What else is available? There's one other symbol to find.
Q.
Why is Q defined? You're telling me this file was easy. Why is Q defined? Where is Q defined?
At the end?
At the very end. Context.q equals P. You have, the REPL will have its own scope, its own context. That's what this context object here is. And you can put whatever you want into that context. You can bind whatever you want by changing this context variable. So what this means is this all this REPL start returns an object. We could have assigned this to another variable and then added things to its context as much as we wanted. Do you follow that? I mean, why does this dot work? What does this dot mean? I mean, this is, we've got REPL.start, open paren, close paren. So the open paren, close paren, that's parameters for a function. The open brace, close brace is that, okay, we're passing it one object that we've just created on the fly that has two properties, prompt and use global. What's the dot talking about? What object is it dereferencing?
Return value of the start.
The return value of REPL.start. It returns an object, and it turns the REPL start object has a context property. We are changing that context property. Well, we're saying this context property is clearly an object that has properties, and we're now setting the property Q of it to P. So this is what I mean when I want you to, you should understand why these things happen. Now, there was one issue with this eval function here, which was you could change. So when you're running eval, eval is letting you evaluate some bit of code. In what context? What, in particular, what symbols can it see and what symbols can it not see? Specifically, when you run this eval, can it see X? Can it see S? Can it see Y? It can see Y because part of the global scope, and we've and when we run this code, we can and so the important part to realize with JavaScript is it's lexically scoped. So wherever the code is defined is what you can access. So whatever we can access here is not dependent on when you call the code. It's where it's defined. It's like this code right here, you can tell what it can see by looking at it. But lexical scope is about the text that you have around it. You go in and you work your way out. So from here, at this particular line, that is the scope that we have access to here. So it's whatever symbols are visible at this line. What symbols can we see here? We can see, we can see S. The object S is visible here. And we can see anything in the file scope, because that's all visible from this line. And the global scope. But I messed up here. Well, I didn't really mess up. But I'm saying is if you're programming this and you did this, it'd be a mess up. I wouldn't want to do this in practice. What did I mess up? What's the problem with this function, with this method, s.j?
Use?
Use x as the variable, so it's defined in that function. It kind of hovers the x that was defined for the containing function.
Right. So there's an x here as the parameter to the function. And there's an x up there as a local variable in the enclosing function. By having an x here, do I mess up that outer x? Did I change that outer x? No, it's still there. I've shadowed it. It's only available, but since I've shadowed it, so what's happened now is I've defined another context, another scope. There's the there's the file scope, there's the function scope for the function f, and then there's the scope for the method j. The scope for the method J has its own X, which shadows the X of our function F. So we can never, inside of here, change the value of that outer X. We just can't see it. Now, I strictly saying won't say never, ever, because I'm not completely sure if Node gives you some sort of way of escaping your scope. I think it might give you some backdoor access. But in general, you shouldn't do such things. It's bad. But to a first approximation, you can't get access to it. Yes?
Can you write another function that changes x inside of the f?
Ah. So what if I define inside the eval, I could define a function here and have it do stuff. But any code I define as part of that string x would define its own function scope. I can't escape. This is the tricky part about shadowing variables in terms of scope. Once you shadow it, you've lost access to the outer variable. You can't talk about it anymore. Exactly. That's exactly it. Right.
So it basically won't ever.
You can never change it. Yeah.
Not giving it anything. It'll just maybe provoke it. Hey, there's no code to evaluate here.
Right. Well, you can evaluate strings. Although it'll actually tell you if you put this hello, that hello is just one string. If you eval it, it'll try looking up the symbol hello, and that won't be defined unless you define it at your global scope or something. So you're just accessing a free symbol and trying to evaluate get the value of it. Does this make sense? It's not. I mean, if you're getting confused, now is the time to ask questions. But I want to ask questions like this on the midterm. Now, I won't necessarily ask you to go in quite this much depth, but you should have some sort of mental model of what's happening here. So if I say, I give you some code like this, and I start asking you questions of what the values are, you should be able to figure out what they are. You should be able to look for, oh, is the symbol being shadowed or not? Because I tell you, there will be an example with a symbol shadowed on the midterm.
Okay, explain it briefly one more time, what it means to shadow variables.
Okay, would someone else like to take a stab at that? So you can get a different approach. What is this? Talking node, we got global, file, and then you could say this is for f, and then this is for method, well, it's j, which is defined. So in here, we have, in s.j, we defined an x, Vx is the argument to the function. In the function f, we've defined it, we defined x and s. And then the file scope, we defined f and p and REPL. And here we defined y.
Did I get up, paste everything?
Yeah. Because we're just talking about what we're seeing in this function here. Now notice I haven't included the scopes for h or g, because those are separate function scopes. They would be parallel right here. But notice in the symbol, when you look up a symbol in JavaScript, when there's just a free symbol in a function, it searches the scopes in a specific order, inner, outer. So if I'm going to refer to x, I start here. I found an x. I'm done. That's all shadowing means. Since I found x here, I will never find it here. This x cannot be accessed. If I do an eval, the eval code is going to be executed starting in this context. So I do eval of, so let's say eval of p. Now notice this. This is one reason why I wanted the eval. So if I say eval of p, note, if I send in just the letter p as a string into here, what will it return?
If you pass it into s.j or?
Yeah, so if I call q.j. Q.j open print, Q.j sub p. What will that return?
Is that a string p or is that
it's a string p passed in. But what does eval do is it takes a string and it parses it, evaluates it.
How can you say q dot? Oh, okay, because q set to p, so you could do that.
Let's do a little. I'm gonna get. Let me.
How can you say q dot j?
Hold on a second. Let's go ahead and utilities. I know there is an SSH client on here. Course software media. General. No. Other applications. No, I'm looking for SSH, for PuTTY. PuTTY is here, I know.
Just search PuTTY.
Thank you. I always forget to do that. Shows you how often I'm working on Windows. Okay. 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 Node puzzle.js. Okay, we have a prompt. So what I want is, so now I've got p not defined, q defined, q dot j, right?
Yeah.
Of, let's start, so let's first do it of x. I just typed in q.j of p, and it returns an object with g, h, and j. I say q.j of f, and it returns function. Now, remember what I was saying about scopes and saying that you can't access those things? Remember I said, I can't access any more. Like, once I run this in the readeval print loop, I can't access F. I can't access REPL. I can't access P. Is that strictly true? No. What's going on? I can pass in a heck of a lot more than that. I can pass in any JavaScript code. I can define entire functions in there. I can define objects. I can do anything I want, put it into a string, send it there. An eval will process it and run it. But the key thing to understand about that eval is it's evaluating it in the context of this line. It's just like you took the text and stuck it into that function. Exactly like that. That's what eval is doing in terms of scope.
How can you say q.j though? How are they related? How is s related to q? Because j is an attribute of.
What I'm trying to point out here is, first off, if I say P is not defined. But if I just say here, say P is defined. That's the thing I want you to note first. Why can the eval access the value of P, but I cannot access the value of P at the readeval print loop? Rook out the scopes. It's all being evaluated in the scope. In this scope, can we access P? Yes. P is perfectly accessible. X is not accessible here. This X is not accessible because we shadow. But S is accessible. REPL, PF, PF, that's all accessible. The bigger question is, why can't I access those at the readeval print loop? What's the scope of the readeval print loop?
Global.
That all is being executed basically right here. Well, technically, it's being executed in a new context just below global, which is clean. What? It's not clean. It's got one thing defined. The REPL loop. The REPL context is here. It will refer to the global. And in here, we have a queue. And the queue here refers to the same thing that P did here. It has no direct access to any of these other scopes. It can't directly reference any of these symbols. What it can do is potentially reference the same object if there are things putting that refer to them. Q is another alias for whatever P does, but that's a data structure here. It's pointing here. These are both pointing to the same thing. And that's why you can access it. There are two different names for the same data structure in memory, the same object. Essentially, every symbol you access in a language like JavaScript, you can think of as a safe pointer. They're always pointing to something. But what it's pointing to is determined by the symbol table you're currently using. And it's actually not one symbol table, it's a chain of symbol tables. Each one, you have a symbol, and then it has a value, which is a pointer to something. If you understand this, you can understand how you can make a function return functions and have them have state inside them. If you don't understand this, you can't. That's going to not make much sense.
Because
What am I talking about here? I'm talking about, let's see if I go back here. So we want to go to the tutorials, we want to go to Simple Adventure. I'll just save this. Okay. Extractor files. Two. Sure. Okay, downloads. Okay, and we're going to go to No, I do not want to go to app.js. How long will it take it to load? That is the question. Okay. So, in the adventure game, this is the essence of this. What is this code right here doing? First, hold on 1 second. Let me bring up the other one. Routes. So, we have app.js here. What is it doing? So here we have our standard get and posts. We have slash start and quit associated with the functions route.index, route.start, routes.quit. Simple. Here, we're creating a function here. We're calling the function. And in this function, we have a for loop, of which they show the indentation wrong in this. Should be like this, but it doesn't really matter. But so we call this, and what is this? What is this doing?
It's calling the local variable app, and it's creating a new.
With the local variable app?
Yeah. So we have to find.
Oh, so there's app.get. So it's a method. So basically, it's exactly the same as app get up there.
Yeah. So this is creating a request handler through a for loop for our file scope variable.
Right. So what this is doing is it's setting up, it's this plus the room. So it's slash, if it was slash bridge. So bridge was this and slash bridge. That's the string there. And now we need to associate that just like up there with a function. But instead of giving it a function, we're calling a function. We're not just giving it the name of one. We're calling a function here. And presumably, this function returns a function. Now, the code that does that is here. This is make room handler. Small little bit of code. But you need to understand what this does. And particularly, you need to understand that what's it doing? It's actually not doing much of anything. It's actually pretty stupid. This make room handler defines an anonymous function here and returns that function. It doesn't do anything except define a function. If I just wanted to define a function, why don't I just return this function right here, this handler? Why'd I have to bother with this whole function returning a function thing and giving it some arguments?
This handler isn't in the scope that it acts as, so what the main handler is.
That's just because I put it that way. Why did I hide it away there?
If you simply return handler, you still need to define what's in the function, what the function does. You can't just define a function and then return it without having the function do something.
So the magic of this is in the arguments to make room handler. What are the arguments to make room handler? Name and contents. When are those used? Does make room handler, the function proper, use those arguments? It doesn't do anything with them. It does no computation. It just returns a function. But the function it returns uses those, name and contents. Those are local variables for this function. What we're doing is we want the same function, we want basically the same functionality for every handler, except we want each handler to have a different name and contents for the room. So every time we run this function, the whole purpose of this is to set up custom bindings for name and contents. That's the whole reason. So what would be a more traditional way, in another language, that you would solve this? So another language, what I might do is say that, okay, this make room handler, I won't have a make room handler. I'll just say, instead what I will do is I will just say apt-get, I'll give it the room, I'll give it a function, I'll give it my handler function, and then I'll give it another argument. I would say handler, and then the room, and then the content. If I said handler, room, and contents, then I would hope that whatever makes use of this will then call it with the appropriate arguments. And in fact, there are routines in Node that do that. But the idea here is we've wrapped it all up in one function and passed it on. Okay. How many of you are feeling confused? Feeling confused, give me something to work on. What looks weird? This seems all mysterious. I can kind of guess. Yes?
Is it possible to write it the other way still in Node? Like how you write in a different language? Or you just can't do that in Node?
So, no, you can do it in Node, but see, to do it that way, So what's the advantage of doing it this way? See, right now, apt-get sets up a handler. It's saying that, okay, this is a, you know, it's going to be out a handler, and that handler has a specific API. That specific API is request and response. Now, is it possible that actually, instead of request response, I could actually include some other arguments? Possibly, but that's changing the API of the callback. That means all of a sudden I have to change how these callbacks are defined. So, I seem to recall that actually I think you can do some stuff with like specifying another callback function to call. But I think that's about it. You can't just sort of give it arbitrary arguments and have them pass them on. And the reason why you don't bother with that is because you can always wrap things up in a function. Define a new function and then have it do what you want. Because you know how when you have a function that only takes one argument and you want to pass something more than one argument into it, like with the J templates? What do? You wrap it all up in an object and pass it along. You basically get a container so you can pass along. So here, we're kind of using functions as containers. But the container we're getting is this scope. Do you want me to try drawing up what happens with the handlers? Would that be helpful? Okay, so I want to leave the code up. So can you see over here? Can you see? What do you see over here? Okay, let's start.
With. How about I draw up a picture? Let's take a break for a couple of minutes.
While I draw the picture. Okay, let's go ahead and get started. So, we got the code here. This is an app.js. Let's... So let's start. So app, which scope is app defined? The object app. It's defined in the file scope of app.js. Right? Because we're in the file app.js, and at the top level, we define app right here. So var app, it's the top level of the file, so it's in the file scope. So now we've got this.
Where? What scope is create rules? Defined here. Yes, create rules is defined here. In what scope is I in the room defined? In create rooms. So it, you know, it's a function, so it has its own scope. So in that scope, we've got I and create rooms, and the room. And indeed, this is the only reason I made a function here, was because I was annoyed that I was going to have to create these loop variables and stuff and make them global to the entire file. And that was just annoying me. And so I decided I basically wanted to have a little local variables. And so in JavaScript, if you want some local variables, what you do is you can't define a separate block, but you can define a separate function and then call it. So that's all I did here. By doing this now, I in the room is limited to this function right here. And you can access it. So I call it here. That's it. But now, I have this loop. I'm looping over the room's data structure. You all remember the room's data structure?
So let's just bring that up for those of you who might have forgotten it. Get back here. Open with. Okay. So this
is a var rooms. All this file defines is one object. So where is this var rooms defined? In what scope is this defined? The file rooms.js. So I really have another scope here, which has a rooms object. This is big object, which is all this description here, with a corresponding sub-objects inside of it.
Right. Each room is its own object. I have this active rooms, which is this list, and then I've got these things here. So I go over to, go over here to app.js.
So I equals zero, I is rooms.activeRooms.length. So I iterate over the list of active rooms. That's a property of that object. Now, where does this rooms come from? Where is that rooms defined? This is remember, the file scope is limited to a file. You leave that file, you can't see those symbols.
It should be up at the top.
Rooms. And it's require rooms.js.rooms. So sure enough, you look at the bottom, exports.rooms equals rooms. Now, one funny thing, I tried this. You could say, well, why don't I just say exports equals rooms? I want that to be there. Don't do that. Don't, that is definitely not what you want to do. And it's for a subtle reason.
You overwrite the exports object.
Do I override it? Remember, this is a pointer. If I change the value of exports in this file, do I change the value of it? What's going to get used by the node infrastructure for doing modules is it's going to use the object that is referred to by exports. If I change exports to refer to another object, node's not going to notice. The module system will use the old object. In other words, if I say exports equals rooms, nothing will be exported. Because I didn't change the object that the module system was using for its exports. It's got its own thing it's set up. We've got other properties which I don't know about. It's some opaque box. I don't know what's in there. But I can't mess it up. You don't assign a new value to exports. It's a special object. You add properties to it. That you can do. That's what you have to do. So that's why I say exports.rooms equals rooms. That means I have an extra level of indirection that I have to undo when I get here. This is why I say require rooms.js.rooms. So I take the exports object that comes back and I just extract out this one object from it, and that's what I assign to rooms. Clear as mud?
So this is a copy of what was exported.
So let's put it this way. In the room scope, there is also, in addition to rooms, there is always a symbol defined called exports. What does it refer to? It refers to this object here. This is an object defined by the module system. It's there. There's this object. When I add a property to this, if I say exports.rooms, it means I now add in here a rooms property. And that now points to it. Well, actually, it points to here, the same object that rooms here was pointing to. If I instead reassign this to point to this, instead of this, I've just broken this. I've just broken that link. Has that changed this object at all? No. In fact, the module system has its own pointer to it. Did I change that pointer? No. I just changed my own pointer to it. I didn't change the underlying object. And that's the object I have to modify if I want to export anything. If I don't add a property to this object, I don't export anything from the scope. Yes?
So this is to export one object, right?
Well, it's to export something. I mean, everything you could say is an object. I mean,
for example, like when we want it could be a function. Index.js, like how we just require routes and it loads in everything in routes.
It does not load in everything in routes.
Index.js.
It does not load everything in. It loads in these.
Yeah, so why is it different? Why is it any different than just loading in rooms.js and having
it
the
isn't.
Export? Yeah, it's written differently.
No, it isn't.
No, in in app.js at the top.
Ah. Well, what do I have here? When I say, when I access routes, I get routes. But then how do I access routes? Do I ever just refer to routes? I refer to routes.index. I refer routes.start. The only thing, I could have just gotten rid of this. I don't need this, strictly speaking. But then later on, whenever I access rooms, I wouldn't access rooms. I'd access rooms.rooms.
.activeRooms.
Yes, I have rooms.rooms.activeRooms.
So it's okay.
Which is annoying. So let's not do that. But you see, so you're returning, you return one object, which is the exports object, and so you can access whatever properties of it you want. And that's what you're doing here when you access the routes object, is you're accessing its properties, and you've given it four properties, the methods that you defined in that file. Well, the functions that you defined in that file. Here, we only defined one, so rather than just refer to that dot one, we've just gone ahead and dereferenced it here, and we're accessing it.
So if I were to make a new function in that file and I didn't put the exports line at the bottom,
mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be able to access it in this file.
Yep.
Yes, I would.
You would not be able to.
Yeah, okay.
You're correct.
What would be preferable, doing it on, so for routes, routes.index it, or can we make a new variable index and then we assign it routes.index like we did in rooms?
So you're saying, which is preferable, to do this or
how you have to call routes.index every time you want to access index?
Oh, routes, I mean, routes slash index. So the idea is that if you have a directory, if the thing you specify is the name of a directory, it will look inside it for index.js. Since I didn't specify the, but I actually here specified the full file name, so it just used the file. Node is smart enough to know if it's a directory or a file and loads that. But if you give a directory, it looks for index.js and it does. We could have just called it routes.js at the top level and just, and then we would have to say dot, and then you'd say dot route, slash routes.js. That's.
Do you see? But let's go back to what was I trying to explain here. So you go here creating the room, creating room.room. So we've got in, so room.js has this. What we have over here now in the app.js is we have rooms, which refers back all the way over to this thing, right? That object. So we then pass in, so now we have these properties, you know, the room, which is a local variable here, which is we're iterating through it. We pass that on here. We pass in the room, and we also pass in the sub-object of this room that's referred to by this property. So the room is bridge, so we go rooms bridge, so we return the bridge object, which is part of rooms. So that's what we're passing here, and we're passing in the name of the room. Because, of course, the sub-object doesn't actually have the word bridge inside of it. That's why I have to pass in both. If you look at rooms, if I pass in engineering, what I'm actually giving it as, you know, when I do that little square bracket notation here, I'm giving it this contents. Is the word, is this property here, is part of this? No. So I'm passing it in. I need... Yes?
Could we add the room name property into it and not have to call it again?
So what could you do is, so instead of passing in, so the question is, why do I pass in the room like this? Why? Because actually, inside of this, I do have the proper title. Well, if you look inside of it, let's look inside that handler function. What does it do with it? Does it use it? Where does it use the name? It says rec session current room equals name. And then it renders the room, the contents. So when it actually renders the room, it just uses the contents. But this, what is that used for? That's, I mean, it's used for so that whenever you access, when you go to slash, and it goes rec session, you know, if you're in slash, you say rec session player, rec redirect, rec session current room. That's how this functionality works. Is because that way, whenever you just go to the slash page, it automatically redirects there because we stored it here. So we need the URL in order to do this. Otherwise, that doesn't work. But back here, so we're in this, we call the routes make room handler. That's what the function we're returning. We're giving it the room, we're giving it the contents. Now we go over here, and the function we're returning is just this function handler. It takes, so what the handler wants is it wants the request and the response, as all good handlers do, just like these ones up here. But it also needs to know what the name of the room is, and it needs to know the contents. Those names and contents change for each room. So we want to fix them in. So logically, these are arguments to the function. But when this function is called at some different time, we can't pass those arguments in. We only have two arguments that are passed in. So we set them in this enclosing function. So what happens is each time this is called, let's say one time this is called, so we call it. So let's say this is for the bridge. So what will happen is we'll have room will be, name will be, we bridge the string, and the contents will be the object that describes the bridge, with the title and the contents. That will be defined in this. And then the handler, it will not have a definition for name. All the handler will have is request and response. But when you run it, it will go and access them from here. When it needs name and contents, it'll get it from here. And every time we call make room handler, we'll get a new one of these. So we get one of these with the bridge, one of these for engineering, one of these for sick bay. We'll get multiple copies of this. But they'll all be, so the code of the handler is the same, but the scope in which it runs will be different each time. Because it will have different, because we turn to a different instantiation of make room handler. Because we'll use call make room handler three times with the three groups. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And the assigned readings, are these things explained in detail?
The assigned readings take a different approach. All this stuff is there in JavaScript, the good parts. It does talk about this, but this sort of scoping issue and stuff is, I wouldn't call it that well explained. But it's explained in a different way. It depends. That's one reason why I spend a lot of time in classes, because I feel like these sort of concepts, you can get away with programming JavaScript and not completely understand them. You can fake it. You all have been faking it. And it kind of works. But if you want to know what's happening, this is what's happening. And a lot of the patterns that you see, you'll see boil down to very simple mechanics. There's not a lot of magic going on behind the scenes. There's just a few principles that are being used. And it's a very flexible set of principles. This is the first class objects. First class functions thing. Lexical scoping, that's all this is. But we're using it to implement things that look kind of like private properties of objects. Yes?
So in app.js, we create
Mm-hmm. Sure, sure, sure. You want to go to app.js?
Yeah.
Okay.
Instead of calling create rooms,
uh-huh.
You just put in the two brackets right after the very end of the function.
Ah.
Is that the same thing? Or?
Right. What you're saying is, could I just have called, can I do this and put a braces right there? Yes. I think that's the syntax. It's a little confusing when you do it that way, but yes. You can define an anonymous function and call it immediately afterwards. So then I wouldn't even need to have the name. I could just say function this, and then a close parentheses and be done. But I look at that and I go like... I find that confusing, but yes, you can do that. And in fact, there are places that do that sort of thing.
So now we take this back to the puzzle code.
Yes.
How are you able to use Q to call those inner functions?
So, how can I use...
Like when you said Q.j, for example.
Right. So, okay, so going back here, why can I access all those functions inside of here? It's because eval is calling in this scope. So anything that you can see inside this function, you can see the code evaluated here can see. When we're at the top level puzzle prompt, we're in a different scope. We're at a scope that's basically defined for the read eval print loop, which has a reference to the, you know, to a higher scope of the global scope. It doesn't have access to this file scope. It doesn't have access to the function scope here of f. But we have access to both of those when we are evaling in here. So that's the weird thing about eval, is that it lets you run code in a different scope. It lets you run the code where the eval was called, where the eval is defined. The eval is defined here, so you can see things right here. So conceptually, this should make sense in the terms of, like, if you're trying to understand code, eval works like you take whatever is that string, and it's like you inserted it into the function right there. It's like you typed it in into this function. So whatever it means is what it means here. And so that kind of is easy to analyze because you look at it. But the way it's implemented is it has to keep track of data structure, which says, what can you see right here? And that's what all the nested scoping is.
Same q.j, although j is not an attribute of q, writing it would still...
J is not an attribute of q?
Well, S is an object, right?
S is an object, yes.
But q is not related to S in any way. That's my question.
No. What is p? P is the return result of calling f. F returns s.
Oh, that's how it works.
So p is an instantiation of S with specific values.
So that's how it works.
Right. And then Q is just P.
Okay. That's what was confusing.
Yes?
So eval topology is pretty powerful, it seems.
It's powerful, but it's not completely powerful. It's like you can't do anything to your program. You can only do anything to your program that you could do from inside, from wherever you called it.
It gives the programmer a lot more flexibility.
It lets you break scoping, in effect.
So what are some examples of its application?
In general, you don't use eval unless you're trying to do some very fancy things. Like you want to make a program, like you want to generate code on the fly. If you literally want to write your own code or something, like for example, let's say you want to make a parser of JavaScript. You can make a parser of JavaScript pretty easily because you can just have a little eval string. This is how you make a read eval print loop. Read eval print. Eval is the read is in the eval thing. You're getting a lot of. It's useful for certain contexts, but most of the time you will not use it.
That was 3D section of the assignment, just the one letter code where you create a function.
here. Sorry. I will go back here. No, this got too many contacts. Okay, this assignment. Okay. So you're looking at this right here. Line 14. Ah, see. This is why I was trying to show you the... So we're calling here Q of J. So I can call Q because Q is P, which is an instant of S. So we can call that. It has the property J. Calling that function, so we're calling the eval. And in that eval, well, we're doing two things here. We're doing this statement, and then we're doing this statement. So what I'm doing first is, in here, I'm saying s.m equals function nmq here. So what, when I say s.m, I'm working in, I'm creating a new function here called s.m. Can I do that? Because in this context, I can access S. So I can add a new method to it. So I'm adding a new method M to it. I'm defining it in a little weird context, in the context of J, but I can access S, so I can do this. And that function takes three parameters, N, M, and Q. And I say, and using N, M, and Q, I redefine X, A, and B. Now, what are X, A, and B? X is the one that's here. A is this argument here, which was, you know, passed in here. And B, where's B?
Sorry,
what? There's a B here.
It's not equal to anything.
Right, we haven't defined it there. So what are we doing actually here? So I just want to walk this through. Is that so? X. So the X that we're redefining is the one that was the argument to the eval function.
That's the one it looks at first before looking at the.
Because it starts in or out.
Yeah.
So in other words, we aren't changing the X that's persistent, the one that's going to go away. So this is mostly thrown away. A. That is referring to the argument for this. So we are changing that. And B, which B are we accessing? It's the global. Because that's the only one we can access. We've just assigned a global value to B in the global scope of Q. So that's why when you say Q of M, this is weird. What do you get? This is weird. It's saying X plus B plus comma plus A. So the X is unchanged. The B is this B, so it's the same as always. You won't see the global B. And the A has been changed. So let's just... Well, can I copy and paste here? Yeah, there you go. Thank you. So I defined a function there. I now copy. So undefined. And then, because remember, all this does is it changes it. And then we call. So what did we mess up? It says hello Anil is. So hello was defined here. The X wasn't defined. The Anil is defined as B, which we just passed in. So that gets in. And then the last prompt is. And is came from this. Because that was A before A was defined as do I know you, but it got changed to is. Okay, does that...
But I thought we were working with it with thou, so it would be x. Shouldn't have the x not been hello?
We changed the x. But the x we changed was that x. We didn't change the x. The x that you can see in function g is not this x. It's that x. That's why hello didn't get clobbered. Hello didn't get clobbered because it was already signed there. B didn't get clobbered because, well, actually, this is a completely different B. This is the local B of that function as opposed to one in the global scope. A did get clobbered.
Okay, I think I already know the answer to this, but just to be sure. So let's say you call the function s.name a bunch of times. Every time you call it, it gets its own scope.
Yes, every time you call a function, it creates a new scope for that function. Because, think of it this way. When you call the function, you have to assign the local variable, you have to assign the arguments values. That's what it means to call a function, is you have to assign the arguments to the function some value. When you assign those arguments a value, you are creating an entire new context that is used now for the execution of the rest of the function. Yes?
How do we get memory leakage? JavaScript is garbage collector.
You don't get memory leakage. Well, okay. Technically, they're not memory leaks. Now, I can show you right here. For example, what if I set x... What if I define some big object as x here? That's going to stick around for the lifetime of my program so long as I have a reference to p. So you can't have memory links improperly, but you can keep data structures around that you can no longer access easily because they've been shadowed by other things. So... Mm-hmm. So you aren't creating if there's no possible way to access the data structure, it'll be reclaimed. If there's one pointer to the data structure somewhere, it'll retain it. And you know, there are ways you could potentially make circular data structures that you have access to. There's pathological situations you can do to have a memory leak, but it really means that you're keeping around references that you aren't using. But it's nothing like working in C or C++. Yes? What's the midterm going to look like? You've seen the assignments. Basically, what they're going to be is you're going to have some questions. What I do is I have there's a couple of multiple choice true false.
Like literally kind of a couple? Just
what?
Like just out of curiosity.
So I haven't finished making up the test, so I can't tell you exactly. But it'll probably, 10 to 20 probably. But it'll be some number of multiple choice, fill in the blank. You know, just kind of asking basic things. And then the rest will be, you'll have some code, and then I'll ask you questions about it. Some of the questions will be simple questions, some of the questions will be more complex.
And the multiple choice is like a third?
Generally, a third to a half. But again... What I generally try to do is make it so that if you've been paying at all attention into class, you'll at least get 50%.
Uh-huh. Okay.
If you kind of like just sort of been doing pattern matching and kind of like doing things, you'll probably get about 50%. If you've been trying to do the work. That understanding will be required for the rest of the grade.
That's good.
So.
You don't read the textbook, you're at a disadvantage if you just do the assignments and...
If you understand the assignments,
yeah.
You're not at a disadvantage. I'm not directly referring to the textbooks. But it's all a question of your level of understanding. If parts of this feel mysterious, I would say all of you can benefit from at least flipping through it and seeing it should hopefully clarify things. If you start reading it and it's making you more confused, then of course stop. But anyway, on Friday I will have more exercises, I will have things for you to play with, and if you want to try hopefully reinforcing some of this. But you've got to play with this on your own.